Hey guys, welcome to Entrepreneurs Uncut. Today we have Dr. Josh Wall on the show, and he's the co-founder of Contour Clinics. Growing up in regional New South Wales, Josh worked hard to rise above the pack at school, all whilst pursuing a professional cycling career. As his passion for cycling had evolved into a passion for medicine, Josh dedicated himself to becoming a leading heart surgeon. Along that journey, the entrepreneurial bug had bitten, and Contour Clinics was born, providing a holistic approach to cosmetic medicine via a team of experienced doctors and nurses. Josh is a high achiever with a track record of success. I admire his dedication to his craft, a true professional setting out to make a positive difference in his industry. I really enjoyed the episode. I hope you do too. So let's get to the show. Josh Wall, welcome to Entrepreneurs Uncut.
Thank you.
Mate, take me back in time from when it all began. What was it like growing up in the Wall household?
Look, pretty standard. I grew up down in Corrimal. It's a suburb of Wollongong. And there was myself, my brother, pretty standard. We're pretty into sport when we were young. So my dad was taking me everywhere cycling. So I used to be right into cycling.
Even as a kid?
Yeah, yeah. So even probably from the age of 8 onwards. And then that became a pretty big part of our life. So for me, like in the teenage years, that was pretty much all I did.
Mm.
So then went with the Institute of Sport for a while.
Wow, so it was a serious thing.
Yeah, when I finished high school, it's actually what I did for a living. I moved over to Paris it was like a semi-professional. I used to do all the under-23 World Cup races. And
wow.
Yeah.
Here I am thinking you're just kicking around with a BMX.
Yeah, no.
Around Wollongong.
Got right into it, yeah. So I did all the Australian titles.
Was your dad a gifted cyclist?
Yeah, he was pretty good at cycling, yes. I think he'd won a few state championships when he was younger.
Okay.
That became a big part of my life till I was about 21, I think.
Were your parents like really pushing you towards it, or was it something that they left up to you?
Look, Dad did push me a little bit towards it.
But, really?
Yeah, a little bit, but look, not too bad. But I mean, I always think now, even though I've become a doctor, I think he'd prefer I was a professional cyclist.
Really?
Yeah.
You would think it's the other way around.
No.
Wow.
Yeah, I think he still misses that a bit.
Yeah, gosh. So I imagine growing up, that would have been a huge part of your life, and yeah, almost everything would have maybe even revolved around it.
Look, it was, but it was a good thing for me because I didn't go to a very good school. So in my school, we had 100 start year 7 and 4 went to uni. Okay. So there was a lot of problems in that school, and I think the only thing that kept me out of that was sport.
Is this high school you're talking
high
about?
High school, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so I think had I not had cycling, I probably would have ended up on a very different path.
Why is that? Was it the discipline?
Yeah, discipline. I always had something to wake up for, you know, something to do, some goal to chase.
Mm.
And I think that's really all I can put it down to, I guess.
Well, and that would have been difficult, I'd imagine. I can relate to it somewhat. I didn't go necessarily to the greatest high school, the most gifted people. I had to work hard, and I'd like to think, similar to your story, a handful or two kind of really wanted to keep progressing in that way. Was it difficult during those times to kind of stay away from the pack, so to speak?
Not really. I was just so focused on cycling to a point I've never really been focused on something since then. It was just become an obsession for me.
So then I'd imagine you couldn't be going out like everyone else
out. I never went out, never drank, never did anything.
Didn't have time to kind of roam the streets?
Nah, never. Right. No, I was training quite long hours and just liked it. Liked racing, liked, you know, going away for the weekend and, yeah, you know, having success cycling.
You would have had mates too in your cycling.
Yeah.
Were they almost stronger friendships than at school?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah. And they were from different schools.
Yeah, from different schools, but it wasn't a very popular sport in my kind of town. So even in my cycling club, there might have been two or three of us at my age.
Yeah.
And then most of them would be all interstate.
Okay. And what kind of distances did you specialise in?
So for me, I was quite good at the time trial. So that was that's about anywhere from 20 to 40 kilometres on okay. your own against the clock.
Yep.
Or it'd be like the more longer distance races. So anywhere from 120 to 260 kilometres.
And is the pinnacle the Tour de France?
Yeah, definitely.
Was that in sight?
Yeah, probably not too far away, I'd imagine. So I would ride like the... So there's a couple of other like one-day races. There's like Paris-Roubaix. I don't know if you've heard of that. No. So it's one of the most popular one-day races. So I'd ride the under 23 version of that.
Okay.
Yeah, so...
Right. And so then high school, and then you did okay in school?
I did okay, yeah. I did... I took a year off in year 12 off cycling, probably 6 months off just to focus on studies because I just wanted to get enough marks to do, you know, most things. So did that and I didn't really study that hard, but in my school it wasn't hard to do well compared to the others. Yeah. So I did okay.
And you knew you wanted to go to uni?
No, at the point I was in high school, not really. No, I was hell-bent on being an athlete.
Yeah. Wow.
And then did that for another 2 years. And to be honest, I didn't like living out of a suitcase. Mm. And then I realised quite quickly, because I'd come from here and won most things. I'd very rarely lost in the junior races here. Then I'd go over to with the big boys and then sometimes I wasn't finishing. So it was a very different experience.
Right.
And then I realised quite quickly that I was never going to be Lance Armstrong. I would have been one of his helpers.
Got it.
You know. So then I thought, oh, I don't know if this is for me.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And when you said the big boys, who are the big boys?
So, look, you're racing like the best of the best. So, I mean, I remember one of the races that I was in, I'd be with all the guys that end up becoming stars in the Tour de France, you know.
Right.
So,
from Australia?
Yeah, from all around the world. So, if you remember the Schleck boys, Andy Schleck,
yep.
ended up winning the Tour. And then a couple of the other guys I used to race with, Matt Goss. I mean, they all went to go very, very well.
Mm.
And I just wasn't at their level.
Right.
It became very apparent quite quickly.
And so you would have grown up in that era of Lance Armstrong.
Yeah.
What was your take on him?
I mean, he was the man, like before all this come out. It's hard to, you don't know how to think about that because, I mean, they're all on it. He just did it better than everyone else.
Yeah.
Not that I never went down that pathway. I had the option. And that was the other reason why I decided to chuck it in because I just that wasn't an option for me.
Well, how come?
I just always was against cheating. Mm. I just never. And then the thought of putting something foreign in your body like that. I mean, at those times as well, there was a lot of young Belgian cyclists dying in their sleep.
Mm. All right.
Yeah, so that was definitely a thing. There were rumours circulating throughout the group that was something that could happen.
Mm.
And being a doctor now and understanding the physiology, it's definitely a problem. Like, I wouldn't want to do that unmonitored.
Yeah, yeah. And look, I really admire what you're saying, that you chose not to go down that path. But if I could play devil's advocate for a moment, the alternate view is, well, it's not cheating if everyone else is doing it.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah,
I don't know if that, no, that's right. I just, what do you think about that?
Well, I mean, like, for me, it still wouldn't have been an option, but there were just too many negatives towards it.
Yeah.
And the other thing too, I don't want that hanging over my shoulder.
Mm.
So constantly having the stress of getting caught.
Yeah.
And it all evaporating.
That'd be terrible.
It would be. I couldn't do that. But, you know, how to think about Lance Armstrong, I think, you know, he just did it better than everyone else, I guess. I don't agree with it, but
yeah.
I understand. I'm sure if you gave him a chance to do it or not do it, he'd do it all over again.
Yeah,
I
mean, yeah. He's
very successful from it.
And that makes me think about the sport of cycling. I guess it's relevant to any professional athlete, but there's a certain amount of obsession that's required.
Absolutely.
That'd be fair to say?
Yeah, yeah.
Does it attract the obsessive?
Look, at the very top it does, yeah.
Yeah.
And you probably see that in most endurance sports. I mean, if you look at like the ultra marathon runners, they're very ultra obsessive, those people.
Right.
And usually quite successful outside of sport.
What do you think that is?
You just got an obsessive personality.
Mm.
You know, so everything you do, you kind of take to the extreme.
Yeah, and complete focus.
Absolutely.
Probably also a great ability to say no to things.
Yeah.
Because if you're going to be really focused on something.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Turning down, like, external things, yeah, very easy.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. Incredible. Mm. Incredible. So there was obviously a juncture where you decided, well, maybe the professional career is not going to be for me.
Yeah.
What was that moment like? Was there a thing that happened?
Well, I kind of got a bit sick for a while. I don't know whether I was burnt out or I just wasn't performing. Like I'd come back to Australia a little bit earlier than I usually would from France, and I just wasn't able to keep up with guys that I would really just do, you know, beat quite easily before.
Yeah.
And then I saw a doctor and I had a bit of blood work and I had glandular fever, but I don't know if that was completely it. And he said, look, you should have about 3 months off. Just let everything chill. And it was around the time where kind of uni was starting.
Okay.
So I thought, I'll start uni. And then I started uni and I just loved it.
Right, okay.
And I kind of transferred all that focus over onto studies.
And what was your degree?
So I did a psychology degree first. I did that for 4 years, and then I started a PhD in psychology. And then it was really, I'd never thought about ever doing medicine before. And then I had a mate that was interested, and the medical school was opening in Wollongong.
Okay.
And we were just at the uni bar one night having drinks, and he goes, the medical school's having like an opening night tonight. Do you want to come along? I said, I'll go and support you, you know.
Mm.
Anyway, they did this hour lecture, and they just sold me.
Really?
Completely sold me.
On medicine?
On medicine. Never thought of it before. And then I thought, this is where I'm, because I wasn't happy with the PhD. I thought, this is not really.
Because you'd finished your psychology degree.
Finished the degree and then started getting into, academia.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I saw that and I thought, what am I doing? Why am I not here?
Right.
I can do a PhD for 4 years, get out, struggle for a job on not great pay and really have to work hard, or I can go and do medicine for 4 years and have a guaranteed job forever doing like quite cool stuff.
Yes.
And if I want to go down this research pathway, I still can.
Yeah.
I can do exactly what I'm doing now, but just with a lot more job security, a lot more job satisfaction.
Yeah, yeah. Can you remember what really sold you?
Well, I think it was the whole hype of the uni was all brand new. There's a brand new library. Everyone's very excited. And then just talking about, the career as a doctor, what you could do. You could go and become a neurosurgeon. You can go and do a rural GP. You can go and do research. You can all kinds of different things.
Were you interested in medicine or the human body before?
Yeah, look, I definitely was with doing the psych degree. I quite enjoyed the physiology part, and how the brain worked. So I thought I was going to head down that kind of pathway, but then in medicine there's just so many options.
Right.
So it became quite cool. I really enjoyed that degree.
So then back in for another 4 years.
Yeah.
That didn't bother you?
Mate, I loved it.
Did you?
I got just as obsessed.
And you weren't cycling by then?
Nah, I'd quit.
Okay. What kind of age were you?
When I started medical school, I was 25, I think, 26.
Right, okay. And loved the learning, or just loved the whole lifestyle?
Just loved the learning. And then for me, it became very competitive as well. So getting the top marks, winning the prizes. And
really?
So, yeah.
And did you have a side gig, a job to keep you going?
Yeah,
or?
So in psych, what I'd done, a mate and I, we were working doing drug and alcohol counselling.
Okay.
So my best friend come and did the same pathway as me, did psych and then went into medical school.
Oh.
And then when we were doing all this welfare work, we noticed there was no real kind of homeless services, or real good ones in Wollongong. So we kind of partnered up with this community housing organisation and helped to start Wollongong's first homeless refuge.
Wow.
So then we both kind of worked there all through medical school. So I would sleep there overnight and do some case management through the afternoon. And
okay.
So I had quite a cool little job there.
Yep.
Doing something very, it was a good job.
Yeah.
So that's what I did through med school.
And very worthwhile. I mean.
Oh, it was perfect. And it's still there now.
Really?
Yeah. So it's a 10-bed homeless refuge that's, persisting without us.
And you founded that?
Helped found it.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a few of us.
Right. Okay. Would have been some great life experience too.
Oh, it was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, we still catch up and talk about that place now. It's pretty wild.
Gosh, so that got you through the 4 years of medical school.
Yeah.
And were you still living in Corrimal?
Living in Wollongong.
Okay.
Yeah, so I moved to Wollongong.
Okay, gotcha. And then once you'd wrapped that up, what was the next step in the journey?
Then I moved up to Sydney and worked in – what happens when you finish medical school – you go into a ballot to see where you work. So it's no longer about who has the best marks or whatever else. So they just put you where they put you.
Yep.
And then I got put out in Bankstown Hospital, which I was quite upset about because I wanted to do neurosurgery and they don't have neurosurgery out there. Right. So that was pretty much that option gone for me. Mm. So then I went out there, did a year there, then I did a year and they put me in Campbelltown Hospital. And then I ended up moving back to my third year. I moved back to Westmead to start doing heart surgery. So I did that for a year.
Right.
Which was quite – because I thought I'll head down that pathway. And then it was just the hours were insanity. I was working like 70, 80 hours a week and not seeing my family. I had a young son at the time, just like brand new boy. And then I just thought I'll probably a bit too many hours and I'll never see him. And I liked it but didn't love it.
Mm.
You know, and all my bosses, they were just like obsessed with surgery.
Right.
You know, I'd call them at 2 a.m. for a case that I knew would take 10 hours to fix and they'd be excited.
To come in?
To come in, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, and I thought, that's not me, you know.
So is that what you – to do heart surgery, you got to get up for 70, 80 hours a week?
Yeah.
On call?
On call, yeah.
Living close to the hospital almost.
Yeah, living within 30 minutes of the hospital.
That's the life.
That's the life, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And look, that's what you want. Like if you've got the guy that's operating on you, you want him to or her to have done that.
100%.
You know, so it's – and they love it.
Yeah.
It's all they have, you know, but
– right.
And for me, that wasn't – I don't think that was an option.
So you'd be still quite young at that stage.
Yeah. How old was I? Probably 32, something like that.
Okay. And at that stage, was the medical kind of career everything you hoped it to be?
Well,
you hadn't really got into your sweet spot yet.
Look, it wasn't as what I'd hoped. It was a lot of – the first 2 years, you're basically just pushing paperwork. You're not really doing any medicine the first 2 years.
Okay.
You're following the boss around and writing his notes and then putting in drips and, you know, writing medical charts and – and not really making any kind of decisions for yourself, which is fine. It's like an apprenticeship.
But, yes.
And the real kind of medicine starts to come probably 3 years out.
Right.
I'd say 3, 4, 5 years out. But what happens in these fields as well is that you don't get a – so you don't just come out and say, I want to be a heart surgeon. You get onto that and then you just do 5 years and you're finished. What happens now is you go unaccredited for a few years. Oh. So you've got to work to get onto that program. So most people say they want to be a plastic surgeon, neurosurgeon. They'll do 2 years out of medical school, then they'll get into unaccredited if they're lucky, and then they'll do 5 years before they get onto a program. Then they've got another 5 years. And then once they finish that 5 years, they've got to go do a fellowship, which is most likely unpaid.
What does a fellowship mean?
So fellowship means, say if you're a neurosurgeon and they're like, you want to go and learn about the doing operations on the front part of the brain, like the real specialized part, you go to America and then you see the best guy in the world that just does that part and then you operate with him for a year.
Wow.
And most of the time it's unpaid.
Right.
So you're now...
You said there's a cohort of people around the world that are obsessive about wanting to specialize in that.
One small little area. So most people do a fellowship once they're finished. So a cardiologist might go and do a fellowship on doing stents.
Right.
You know, so there's so many different areas of each field and there'll be people who are specialised in just doing that. And then that's what most people want to do. They want to have an ultra niche.
Yes, yeah.
But then you're thinking, you're a consultant surgeon. You've been working for 13 years, 14 years. Now you're doing a year unpaid.
Mm.
So there was all that. And then what's happening with the hospital system and the pay structures are all changing. Yeah. It's getting a lot more competitive and I just thought, oh, this is...
Not for you.
This is going to be hard.
Right.
You know, so.
So then you're thinking, doing heart surgery at the time.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, this is not quite for me.
Yeah, I wanted more of a lifestyle. I'd always kind of enjoyed business as well.
Okay.
And then I just had an opportunity. I met my business partner and we'd kind of... I've done a little bit of cosmetics on the side for some pocket money.
Yep.
So I knew about it. And then we come up with quite a good business plan and kind of tackled a niche that we thought was quite untapped at the moment. And that was about 3 years ago now. And
okay.
It's crushed it.
So it's about almost 3 or 4 years ago, you were doing heart surgery. And then you thought, and when you said that you enjoyed business, had you had any forays in?
Yeah, when I did my psych degree, I started a little courier business.
Okay.
And where I'd go and like deliver parcels. So I got a couple of little contracts, like right. Hit up a couple of the retail stores and was like delivering TVs for Meijer and those kind of things. Yeah. And yeah, it was quite cool. So I kind of set all that up and I'd do that. I'd get up at like 4 and do that before uni.
Is that out of a like necessity to make money or do you feel like, is there something that intrigued you about maybe creating something?
Yeah, I'd always wanted to do it, but no one in my family's in business and I had no real mentors to know what to do. Mm. And like I'd done all the other jobs, like, you know, Best and Less and packing shelves at Woolies.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, no way. That's hard work.
That's a real credit to you, obviously, not having anyone kind of in your... say family to maybe help guide those initial steps, but you just had an idea and went for it, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. I just thought, well, why not? I bought like a van. I thought, oh, well, I mean, worst comes to worst, I have a van to drive around.
Yeah.
You know, you can't lose, really.
What did you learn out of that experience?
I learned that, you know, success in business is mostly about networking. You know, it's really,
even with the parcel?
Yeah, I mean, I had to make all the contractors happy. I feel like I got the contracts because they like me rather than I did a fantastic job delivering parcels.
Yeah. So is it important in that business as is it important in many other businesses?
Look, I think so.
Wow.
And look, even if you look at my business now, we have a chain of cosmetic clinics. Like having people work for you, they're not going to work for – they've got a lot of options, the doctors and nurses now. Yeah. And if you know, if they don't like you – they're not going to want to work for you.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so even just about going out, creating networks, and being able to approach people as well. If you've got a bit of a network, people start to know you. Then it's a lot easier to make those contacts.
Yes.
So that I've kind of carried that across to here, with some success.
I like what you're saying about people, and I believe, you know, people do business with people they like.
Yeah, of course.
You need to be likable. How do you make yourself likable?
Look, nothing's a problem, I guess, like when it comes to, I try and do that as much as I can. So, you know, just make things easy for people, I guess.
That's great. It's simple.
Yeah.
And then circling back to that moment where, okay, you're ready to, you met your business partner.
Yep.
Or who was going to be your business partner. How did you see that market opportunity? What was happening at the time?
Yeah, I guess there's two different things there. Is that one of them there was, so in terms of the landscape in cosmetics, so like this is the Botox and fillers and, you know, laser, you'd have like the chain clinics that were like low end, still provide a good service, but low end budget, run by people who are not in the medical fraternity at all. There'd be places like your laser clinics and they offered like quite a cheap service. And then you have the plastic surgeons on the other end. They were obscenely expensive and there was nothing in the middle. Mm. There was one or two small players that were kind of doing it, but they didn't have the marketing down pat. They didn't have a few things down pat. And we thought there's a real kind of gap in the market there for, you know, quite a trusted clinic because no one really knew. You don't know who you're going to see. So that was our thing, to create like a trusted brand, to think, well, I can trust these guys with my face.
Yes, with my body.
Yeah, exactly. It's a doctor-led clinic. You know, safety and results are foremost. So we've really pushed that out. And the other thing is education. Mm. So we do a lot of filming. So my whole goal is that if you go on my website and you're interested in, I don't know, getting your frown line fixed, you can go and read everything there is to know about frown lines on my website. You can actually watch the consultation happen. So there's no questions before you come to see me. You've already seen the whole consultation. You've seen me do the injections. You've seen me explain the aftercare. It's like there's I've removed all questions. So I've found that that's worked quite well.
It's absolutely made
people feel comfortable about the experience.
Builds trust.
Absolutely. So there's the one side of thing in terms of a gap. The other side is that having gone through this myself in medicine and seeing – because 20 years ago in medicine, you come out of medical school, you're like, I want to be an orthopedic surgeon. You go and see the orthopedic surgeon. He goes, yeah, you're okay. Come on. And then that was easy. Whereas now you've got to do the 5 years unaccredited. You're on this hamster wheel that you don't know if you'll ever get off. So I knew there'd be a lot of guys who were very talented who were thinking, I went off this hamster wheel.
Yes.
So, and then what I do is that, you know, I speak to them and then I give them an option to get off that wheel, to start making very good money and get into a job where you're working 10 till 5, people are very happy, no one's sick and dying.
Mm.
It's a very different experience. Wow. So I knew that that would be a thing that was coming. So and now and that's how my kind of, it's not a franchise, but it's like a franchising plan.
Mm.
We do a 50-50 split with doctors. And I know I can offer them all that kind of thing, do the business solution for them.
Yes.
And they can do what they're good at, which is medicine, which is, you know, doing the injecting and the treating.
That's really interesting because I never looked at it that way, that it's almost the business is the two major areas. One is attracting clientele with the value proposition that you describe being that middle piece, trusted piece.
Yeah.
But when you kind of look behind the curtain, there's also the supply side of how do we – there's an opportunity with the supply side and freeing up – maybe there's some frustrations with doctors when you explain that whole process of what it takes to become, you know, the top of the top. There's not many people that necessarily wants the life of a top of the top.
Yeah.
That's pretty incredible. So you're really unlocking that talent.
Yeah, and like we do. I treat that side of the process like I treat a patient experience. So I've got a patient that comes in, I make sure that the way they're greeted is standardized, the way that, you know, it's an experience for them. They get the nice herbal teas and like they sit down in a really nice, beautiful environment. I do the same thing for the doctors that are coming in.
Yeah.
So I make sure that it's a beautiful place that we meet and, you know, I make sure that experience is standardized and I make their experience and when they come on to work for me, you know, the regular phone calls and the trying to target that side of the business as well because I understand how valuable those people are because it's such a high barrier to entry. You know, so all of my staff, I mean, they've at least got a nursing degree.
Yes.
Or if they don't, they've got, you know, a medical degree that most of us take 8 to 10 years to get through.
Right.
You know, so those people – and I kind of got this off there's a GP practice called Primary Healthcare.
Yep.
Very successful. And what their model was is that they would come in and they would say you were a very successful GP working there, they'd pay you for your practice, but then you've got to work for them for 5 years. And I thought to myself, well, if I don't have the money to go and like pay doctors to come and work for me, but what I'll say is that I'll build you a clinic for nothing and then you've got to sign on to work. So, and then you pay me back.
Yeah,
for that. So it's a similar model.
Yeah,
but I don't have to front the $300,000-$500,000 up front.
Yes,
just for them to come on.
Right, and just getting back to the work, and I know that you kind of transitioned from heart surgery into this field. Is that an easy segue, or was there a lot of things that you needed to learn? Or anybody needs to learn if they were to segue into what you do?
Yeah, look, so you do need to go and do a lot of courses. And so I'd done a lot of courses. I'd hooked up with a lot of the pharmaceutical companies to organise
the training. And this is you did the courses after you decided there's a business in this?
Yeah. So once I'd made the decision, I was still working, although I'd taken a lot of the on-call away because I'd said, look, I'm done.
Can't do it.
At the end of the year. So you can even have me for the next 3 months or I can quit. So they were happy for me to just do the weekday stuff.
Yep.
And then I went and did all the courses, did all the study, read everything. And back when I started, even though it wasn't that long ago, I mean, this is a pretty new field, to be honest. Like, and there wasn't many courses. There wasn't many things. Now the market's flooded with them.
Is it?
Because, to give you an idea of the growth of this field, I read a thing where this field grows 50% every year.
Wow.
Yeah,
so it's not many industries that do that.
If we spend $5 billion this year, we'll spend $7.5 next year.
Right.
You know, so it's a space that everyone wants to get into at the moment.
Yeah.
Because it is growing so much.
Right.
So it was hard to get training then. Now it's a lot easier.
Yeah.
But did the training for a while. And then most of the stuff I started with when we had business was the very basic stuff, the Botoxes, the fillers.
Yes.
And then we've moved into some more complicated things now. And now we've kind of branched out into surgery as well. We've got a few plastic surgeons that have come on board.
Okay.
That kind of offer everything.
Right. Okay. And your business partner, did he undertake the same kind of training, or was he focusing on something different for the business?
Yeah. So my business partner is not a doctor. He's a pharmacist.
Okay.
And had a foray into this kind of field before.
Okay.
With his wife, who's a nurse.
Yep.
With another doctor and. Whilst they were successful, they were going down like the Groupon pathway,
right?
You know, the low price, high volume kind of, and there's not a lot of margin in that.
Yep.
And their doctor was hoping to go more into liposuction, and for Benny wasn't really much of a business partner, so Ben wanted to kind of transition out of that and into what we've created now.
Yes.
And he'd learn a couple of lessons from doing that over 2 years.
Okay.
So we started the other contour. And while that one was still going,
right,
and then after about a year, we bought that other doctor out of that clinic.
Oh, okay.
And then I took over his share, and we rebranded it. So that
is that because there was infrastructure in place? It was easier to do that.
It was all in place already.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then it just made things streamlined for both of us.
Yes. Yeah. Got it. And so, was there a launch moment where you just went full time? What was that like?
Yeah. So I did that. Probably 3 years ago, and look, it was a little bit of a worry at the time. Like I took, I sold my house and like poured everything into it, and
right.
And for the first 6 months, we didn't have many patients, so I was just staring at my practice manager for 6 months, thinking, "Oh God,
really?
Yeah." But those things are good. I think they. I mean, it had to work.
Yeah,
I had no option.
You put it all on the line.
Yeah. So then I'd really like be studying every marketing book and. You know, trying to work out how to get patients in the door.
Yeah.
Because we didn't want to go down that Groupon pathway.
Yeah.
We knew that was neat. Look, we knew worst comes to worst, we can just plug this into Groupon and it's going to succeed.
Okay.
But we wanted to create a more high value proposition. So,
first 6 months, bit of an eye opener.
Yeah.
And clearly the issue then was, how do I generate demand?
Yeah.
So, you said you threw yourself, read every marketing book.
Yeah.
Had you done any marketing before that point other than
nothing.
Your courier business way back when?
Yeah, nothing. Absolutely nothing.
So where did you start?
Where did I start?
Were there any particular books that really stuck out?
Look, I really like a guy called Russell Brunson.
Oh, okay.
So he owns ClickFunnels.
Oh.
And it's all about a thing called funnel hacking. So what he'll do, and this is what I did in my field as well, is that I'll go and pretend I'm a customer for another business that I know is doing really well, and then I'll understand their whole process, their intake process.
Get through their funnel.
Exactly.
Oh.
And then I work backwards from that.
Okay.
And then I see what's worked for them, what hasn't worked,
yes.
What my experience has been like as a customer, and where kind of some sticking points were for me, and remove those in my funnels.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I started. Then I'd read – I'm trying to think of some of the other books – or even just following, even like the vlogs and blogs, and you get a lot of good stuff out of that as well.
Did you know that you needed to go down the digital path to make, was that an obvious thing?
It was an obvious thing for us, because I feel like businesses like mine, we're online these days.
Yeah.
We're mostly an online business. So yeah. I knew that, because when I first started, I didn't really understand too much. And I thought, you had to be in a mall, you had to have some foot traffic going past, but
old school.
Yeah, but now, I mean, our Newtown clinic's like hidden away, and we have no problems with filling it out.
Yes.
So it's mostly about, you know, the Facebook, the Instagram marketing, the LinkedIn marketing,
digital,
you know,
capability,
all of that stuff. We find helps a lot.
Right.
I think the turning point for the marketing side of things, I run a competition, which was quite cool. I'd heard about this through a mate that had done it for a friend in car detailing.
Yeah.
And what he did is he gave away prizes, right? right? So for us, we gave $5,000 away in prizes. Mm-hmm. So it was like first place was $2,000, then it was, you know, $1,000 and $500 or whatever. And then I put that out. I put about, maybe I put $1,000 behind it on Facebook. And this is back when you could put $1,000 behind something, it would go to like a million people. You know, you can't do that now. And I got 15,000 entries into this competition. And then what I did is that like we
Which drew, is basically 15,000 people in your database?
Yeah. Right. It gets better. Okay. So then what I did is that we gave vouchers out, like a prize voucher, didn't say which place they come, but gave everyone a $100 voucher. So all 15,000 people.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so our normal kind of, you know, average spend is $500.
Yeah.
And our profit margin, that's maybe 200.
How smart is that?
Yeah, so then I overnight filled the business out, and we've never been not booked out since. That was in the first 6 months.
So prize? 15,000 applicants.
Yeah.
One winner.
Yeah. A few winners, like first, second, third prize.
All right. And then 14,997 people got $100
voucher. Yeah.
That's great. That's genius.
Yeah, yeah.
With then an average spend that's over, covers it. And suddenly, boom, you're...
Boom, full.
Right. Yeah. Was that like an instant?
Instant.
How long did it take for the 15,000 people to start coming through the door? Is that a 6 to 12 months?
Look, I think probably maybe out of those 2,000 come through the door.
Yeah.
But I mean, at that time, my capacity was 15 a day.
Yes. Yeah.
So then it was about like building a team behind us.
You caused the right problem.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what was that like? I guess after that marketing exercise, there would have been a big shift in the business, I'd imagine.
Yeah, we become pretty busy pretty quickly. And then it was like then you're kind of trying to put out spot fires, I guess. So then you're like, oh, we need more people here. Or, you know, my practice manager's overwhelmed. I need another helper for her. Or, but then we've got to train that person. It's like
you
become trying a bit of a scramble to,
to
help things. But
wow.
I feel like we've only just recovered. So now I feel like we're just on top of it. We've crested a wave and now we're kind of in a good position to grow.
Right. And it's interesting. This is now, I'm not a great economics student, but thinking about economics, so what really drives an industry, is it demand or is it supply? And they say in the long term, it's supply. So you could create, let's say, 15,000 customers overnight, and you think they're driving the demand, but in the long term, what really drives the industry is your ability to supply those 15,000. So I'd imagine as soon as you solve that problem, then at what point did you realise, wow, I've got to start to get doctors on board? And did that become the next big thing?
That become the next big thing. And then
does that make sense, what I described?
Absolutely. Then it becomes about trying to get good stuff
involved
as well.
Yeah, quality.
Quality, yeah. And, you know, in my field, you need someone to be teachable. Not everyone's teachable.
Mm.
A lot of people, you'll see some red flags straight away where they're a bit too overconfident.
Mm.
And so what we've done for this kind of stuff is that we've created a bit of a spin-off business where we do like a teaching academy. So we bring people in and teach them over 2 days, which they pay us a good fee for. Mm. And then it's like a 2-day interview they don't know they're having.
Yeah.
You know, so then you can like pick out the best students. And
where did you get that idea from?
The best friend that brought me to the medical school that night, he ended up becoming a physio.
Okay.
And he's got a very successful physio practice, 3 practices, you know, 50, 60 staff. And he still is the head demonstrator for anatomy at uni. And I said, what are you doing that for? Like, they'd be paying you peanuts. And he said, because I get to poach all the best students.
Yeah, supply.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Sure.
And I thought, oh, that's genius.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I'll do.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And because I could see how that's just such a great strategy for recruitment.
It is.
And filtering
absolutely
out.
Yeah. Because then I can watch them inject, which they're all not very good at when they first start, but I get to see like what their bedside manner's like.
Yeah.
You know, if a patient's being difficult, how do they react to that? How do they react to their colleagues? Are they nice to be around for those 2 days?
How important is that compared to the technical?
Very, very important. The technical, what we do is quite easy. There's a couple of things that get a bit technical and difficult, but they're few and far between in my field. It's more important. Like, I had a young nurse that come in, had no experience, but we interviewed with her and we just said, we just have to give her a job.
Like, really?
We just have to make it work. And she's been one of our best injectors.
Wow.
Yeah, because, and she's just like, I reckon almost every day she gets a 5-star review on Google. So it's just unheard of, but it's like more about finding good people that are capable and then making it work. And that's where I've found most success.
It's a bit of a link to what you said before about making it easy for someone.
Yeah.
And giving them a good experience, making it easy.
Yeah.
I'd imagine it's a high trust exercise. They're coming in with a certain level of stress, different for different people, and maybe a different level of anxiety. And for them to come out feeling more confident than they came in.
Yeah, exactly.
Is a lot to do with the person that's treating them.
100%.
Wow.
Yeah, definitely.
So then with the business, then you started the academy, started to get obviously attracting people who potentially could work in the clinics and be partners in the clinics.
Yeah.
And what was the next evolution in the business? Was it just pure exponential growth? What was it like?
Yeah, I think it's – for us now, it's been a lot of kind of – been a lot of growth from there. So, I mean, I think we've in the last 4 months we've tripled our revenue, which has been
even over COVID.
Yeah. So coming out of COVID, look, it's probably a bit of a byproduct of built pent up demand after COVID.
Yeah.
But it still seems to persist. We still seem to be quite booked out, and even well into I think my next appointment's in March, late March, I think.
Right.
So there's still a lot of demand there. We're kind of trying to – so we've opened our fourth clinic in Brisbane. That was 2 weeks ago, which seems to be doing okay. We're opening another clinic probably in February, and then we'll just kind of roll out from there, I guess.
Right.
Try and have – maybe do another 2 or 3 next year, 5 the year after, try and, you know, take it all over Australia.
Yeah. And what do you see as the biggest challenges – of late in the business with that growth, what are you coming up against mainly?
Look, I think it's about trying to keep that consistent experience for the patient and for the staff.
Mm.
You know, so when we first opened, when we first started bringing doctors on board and nurses, there was like 2 or 3 of them, so I can really, you know, be there for them. Now we've got 20, you know, so to give them the same level of attention and same level of teaching and training and trying to keep make sure that everyone's not being left behind and make sure everyone feels like they're having a good experience at work and having enough professional development, and similarly making sure that everyone's up to the standard that patients can be happy with. So we're not getting complaints or, you know, poor results. So I guess that the quality control for me, I mean, that's the side of the business I'm on, being the medical director.
Yep.
So that's the thing I most look at, making sure that everything's kind of running up to scratch with that.
Right. And it seems like you've got a really good track history of solving the problems at the different stages of the business. Obviously starting the business, that's solving problems, just getting into existence and then building up demand and then shoring up the doctors that are going to come on board. That next frontier of, you know, quality control as you're scaling, are you back into the books or back into research about how to tackle that problem? How do you approach that problem?
Well, I guess it's more kind of redirecting my time at the moment away from like front facing patient to more training and more, you know, setting up processes.
Yeah.
And then giving incentives to some of my more senior staff to take on those roles as well.
Yeah.
So what we do at the moment is every week we hold like an injector meeting where we all run through our problems we've had in the week, and, you know, we've got all the experienced doctors there to kind of comment on the cases.
Yes.
So to all share our knowledge, I guess that's probably been one of the things that's helped a lot is trying to share the expertise in the business.
That's great.
Because it's a very lonely job what we're doing, because we're in a room with a patient alone. We're not working. It's not like in the, you know, back in the hospitals operating where you're like you're operating with 2 or 3 other people.
Yeah.
It's in the room alone all day, and you might be doing something wrong for years and not really have an understanding of what it is, because no one's there supervising you.
Yes.
So this is the best way of supervision that I can kind of find for that. And then because we've developed a pretty good relationship with the pharmaceutical companies, they've got a lot of trainers there.
Mm.
Because we're becoming more successful, we're ordering more products, so then I'm demanding of them more training.
Yes.
So we probably run about 5 trainings a week for our staff.
Wow.
So then we give our staff, you know, 1, 2, 3 hours free, block yes. out in their schedule, and then we'll have some patient volunteers come in and they can treat them and
yeah.
And learn from there.
It sounds like a really important part of the business to keep growing, because as it grows, as anything grows, that's the whole trick, I guess, is how do you keep the quality there?
Yeah.
Really good systems, processes and training.
Yeah.
And affording people the time to do the training is critical, yeah?
And then the other thing is like repurposing. So
yeah.
that training is repurposes marketing content. Oh. So we've got patient volunteers coming in and then we'll be taking before and after photos
yes.
and using them in our marketing.
Yes, yeah.
Well. So and it's good for the doctors and nurses, because then we can put a profile behind them.
Yes.
So they like that training, because it's hard to – I mean, you don't always want to ask a patient to use their before and afters, because they're paid for a service, and I feel like it slightly decreases the patient experience.
Right.
But with this kind of thing, it's expected.
So yeah.
It's a
– because they're coming in
for a free treatment.
Gotcha. Yeah. It's part of the deal.
It's part of the deal, yeah. And so I think that's good. So repurposing where you can
yes.
is another good thing.
What about on the client experience side? You mentioned how the industry is growing at 50% a year.
Yeah.
Why do you think there's that growth rate?
I think it's just becoming – the taboo's moving away from this. Mm. So, I mean, even if you look now about just the culture shift in general, people are more keen on, you know, on a Saturday morning, they're more likely to be at the gym rather than recovering from a hangover.
Mm.
You know, like it just seems to be more of a push towards health and looking,
self-care.
Feeling self-care. It seems to be. I mean, I know certainly amongst my friendship group, it seems to be a lot more that way now. People are more looking after themselves.
Yeah.
And this is just an extra kind of level. Like it's like, you know, you go to the hairdresser to color your hair, you go and get your Botox done. It just makes you look better,
yeah.
feel better. And it's becoming very, very popular now.
Right.
I mean, yeah, I can't think of many of my friends that don't get it. I mean, I'm in a different field, I guess.
But yeah, yeah.
Most people get this stuff done now, because it just looks natural and fresh. And
because like 20 years ago, Wolf probably wouldn't even be in the conversation, and if it was, it'd be quite radical. And it's like, well, you know, and I could imagine with the generations before.
Yeah.
To their kids, you know, you're fine as you are, that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
It's been a real shift of late, hasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, it's an interesting thing. I mean, people won't bat an eyelid about spending, you know, $2,000 to fix the fender on the front of their car because it looks nicer.
Yeah.
And they'll think, oh, it's spending $2,000 on my face. It's yeah. this thing that, you know, you're on Zoom all day. And it's but that attitude's changing.
Yeah.
It definitely is. And people are a bit more concerned about aging and anti-aging and
wow.
what have you. So, and the other thing I find quite interesting is men are getting more into this.
Really?
So, yeah.
They're so the growth
that they are. So my next clinic I want to open is a men's only clinic.
Really?
And I think it would crush it.
I actually quite like that idea.
It would be amazing. I just know this is going to work. So to give you an example of how I know it's going to work is that I do a lot of like back end, you know, Google Analytics. I'm yep. right into that kind of thing.
Yep.
And we get about, I think it's about 40,000 visitors a month to our website, and 30% of them are men.
Okay.
But I don't get 30% of men coming through the clinic, so I think it's more of like they're in the research phase and I think they know about this stuff, but I do know that the way my clinics are set up, they're not exactly gender neutral, so it might feel a little bit intimidating to come to my clinic because it is a little bit slightly feminine.
Mm.
Although we do still probably about 15% of our patients are men.
I'm just trying to think of the psychology. If you had a men's only clinic, what problem is that solving for men? Are they embarrassed to walk into a female looking?
Yeah.
Is that it?
Yeah. Yeah. That would be my interpretation of it. I know some clinics in the city that are completely booked out, like overwhelmed, and they're men's only clinics, but they're like barbershops that have offered injectables.
Oh,
so okay. They're not a specific injectables place.
It's that lower end.
It's the lower end. I'm sure they still provide a good service, but it's an add-on.
Yeah.
It's the thing you go out the back to get done.
Yeah, gotcha.
You know, whereas you come to our place and it's like, I could set it up exactly like a you know, barbershop, have all the, you know, wood paneling and make it all look very masculine.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that that'd be something I wouldn't have any concerns about booking out. I'm sure that'd do very well.
Right. And just can you give me an idea of the range of different types of service offerings that our Consort Clinics provides?
Yeah, so at the moment I've kind of expanded things out to offer basically everything in cosmetics. So anything you could possibly think of, we offer. So all the way from like your general facial treatment, where you go in just to make, you know, your face feel nicer, which is a very kind of non-invasive, you know, go in, go out, go back to work, all the way up until now we can do like a facelift with a plastic surgeon, body lift, you know, tummy tuck and breast augmentation. So pretty much anything you can think of. And we offer every kind of laser technology available. So when I started this kind of business, I was noticing that there's so many different technologies out there that all purport to do different things.
Mm.
And I wanted to have all the options. So you got the treatment that you need rather than the treatment I have.
Okay.
So, because I noticed that a lot of people would push things on patients that they didn't 100% need. They needed something done for there, but this probably wasn't the best option for it.
Mm.
Sure, it will make some difference, but it's not the gold standard.
Mm. They didn't want to get the equipment for it.
Yeah, because the equipment's very expensive.
Yeah.
You know? So if you buy a really good laser, so some of our lasers, they might set you back $200,000.
Yes.
It's a big capital outlay that when you don't have a strong laser business, that might take me 5 years to recover that cost.
Mm.
You know, so not everyone. And then you push that out over five clinics. I mean, that's $1 million.
Yeah.
It's a lot of money for something that you haven't, you know, fully established. So
that's another unique point of difference where you do offer the multiple different technologies that suits that person's need.
Yeah, so we're just a complete solution. So you go and get your breast augmentation done, and then you come back, and as a part of your follow-up, you get free lasers to treat the scars. Afterwards, no one does that.
Right.
Or you get your, I mean, the other thing is it's a safety thing as well. So, you know, all of these treatments do carry some risk, and they may be a 1 in 1,000, 1 in 10,000 risk, but now we're getting popular, we're starting to hit those numbers.
Yep.
And, you know, you have, even though some of my treatments will be done by a nurse, you've always got someone like me there, so the medical director, and then the 1 in 50,000 case that I can't help, then we've got our plastic surgeons there. So it's a very safe kind of environment.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of redundancy. Well.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Because I'd imagine, I mean, you see those backyard jobs on Karen Affair, that would be your worst nightmare.
Absolutely.
Anyone's worst nightmare, yeah.
I can't. I mean, that was another part about doing the business is that, and I feel it's something I need to educate people better on. I'm not that expensive. I think people look at our brand and think, oh, that's a bit expensive. Whereas we're actually pretty much on par with all the other players.
Mm.
We're slightly more expensive than the budget chains, but not that much more.
Mm.
And even when you do go and see, you know, the nurse that's practicing out of her bedroom, they're still not that cheap.
Mm.
You know, so I don't really understand why people would do that. But I mean, I guess it's a lack of education. That's what we're trying to do with our brand, trying to
say,
look, there is an option that's not. I mean, all this stuff's expensive, but it's not that bad.
No, and I think that maybe explain why you're so passionate about the subject of education and marketing. I mean, marketing is to get it out there, right? To get the education
get the message
out there.
This is something you can do to make yourself feel more confident.
Yes.
Which is a very underestimated thing. And then the other thing is the safety aspect as well. And touching on that safety aspect, I don't know if you've seen those specials about the cosmetic surgeons recently on Four Corners that had been doing some pretty dodgy stuff. And so there's a problem in our industry at the moment. It's very unregulated. So for me at the moment, I've got no experience in doing like breast augmentations or anything like that. I can go and do like a course for a day and then start doing them.
Wow.
Because I've got a Bachelor of Surgery.
Got it.
Right? So, but I'm definitely not the guy to be doing that. Mm. But I can.
Yes.
Which is a big problem.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah. So there's been a few cases now where you've got some very inexperienced guys doing some crazy stuff out there, and there's been a few deregistered recently for that. And with bringing the surgeons involved, I just want to when you think of a brand like Contour, I want you to think this is a safe place. I can go here and I can trust these guys. So everyone that's doing something, it's at their level. We're all staying in our lanes. We're not doing things that are outside of our scope. Mm. You know, so if there is the more complicated thing, you know, it goes to the plastic surgeon. And even within our plastic surgery team, we've got the junior plastic surgeons who have still got like 15 years behind them. And then we've got the guy that's got 30 years behind him. So if it's the real complicated facelift, it sees him.
Yes.
You know, so it's that's another kind of thing we're bringing into our business. It's a safety at all levels.
That's great. It's
a real kind of trust.
And I can understand how as you grow with that structure in place, it only augments, it only gets Absolutely. Stronger and stronger. Which yeah.
You've got a lot of good people involved, and then it's a business as well that people want to be involved with.
Yeah.
So I've got another guy who's almost finished his dermatology training, and he's going to come involved and do more of the complicated laser things.
Got it.
So eventually I want our brand to be, you know, synonymous with cosmetics.
Mm.
If you think of getting something done, that you think of us, you know, that would be the dream.
And 3 years into the business, you enjoying it?
Mate, I love it. Yeah, it's been
big difference from working out of Bankstown Hospital.
Yeah, it's a bit different. Although the clientele can be pretty similar sometimes. it's been good. It's been nice. I mean, you've owned a business before. Watching your baby grow.
Yeah.
You know, it's been nice to see. And this time of year is always very good for me because it's like Christmas party time.
Mm.
So I think about my first Christmas party, which was at Five Dock Hotel, me and my practice manager just staring at each other over a schooner. And then like, you know, last year we've got like, you know, 20 people at the Christmas party. Wow. And this year we'll have 50.
Wow.
You know, so it's I've got a really cool photo at home that I always look at. And it's when our first clinic in Five Dock was being built, and I was there with my son and he was about 2 or 3 months old, right? And I'm holding him and it's just a shell of a place. And then I've got the same photo last year with like a beautiful clinic behind it and like 20 staff there. Like it's just such a nice thing to see where you've come from. And then each year we do that photo and it gets bigger.
That's awesome.
You know, so it's a cool, whilst you do have a lot of stresses and struggles, those kind of times make you think it's all worthwhile.
And have you been able to have more time with your son?
Yeah, so I'm slowly stepping back from doing the clinical stuff and kind of blocking out time for that, because I do think that's very important. Mm. What's nice here is that I'm slowly trying to make myself a bit redundant in the business, trying to, whilst I'll always be very, very involved, it'll be by choice rather than a necessity. So I really want to make myself not needed as much.
Yeah, yeah, and let the business become more fully fledged and
exactly
separate from your...
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, from yourself.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's very smart. And what's the future vision for the business?
So the future vision, I guess, would be to be all over the country. So it'll be about probably looking around 20 to 25 clinics in the next 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And having that just shored up and solid, I guess, making sure the policies, procedures, everything's just rock, you know, airtight. Mm. But I mean, who knows, really? Mm. Things progress pretty quickly.
So could be 50, mate.
Who knows, yeah. I mean, I start to look at a good mate of mine is the head doctor at Laser Clinics, and he tells me about their expansion all the time, and I think, why not?
You know, yeah.
They're moving into Canada and New Zealand and the UK, and I think it's... I mean, I know I'm basically following after their footsteps with a slightly different offering, and I think if they're going into those markets, then my business will definitely fit into those markets if they've been successful. So who knows? I might want to do that, but we'll see.
It looks very, very promising for you. Mm. Mate, really enjoyed the chat. It's been fascinating, actually. I don't usually get to talk too much around this area, and it's been good to learn off you, so thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Good time to get into our final 5 questions, I reckon.
Cool, yeah, perfect.
All right. Josh, who was your idol growing up?
I mean, I probably mentioned this before. It hasn't aged very well, but Lance Armstrong. What I did like about that guy was that he just left no stone unturned.
Okay.
So
in his preparation.
In his preparation, he was the man. So he would go down to the point where he would get his sweat analyzed to see which minerals he was losing. And then in his drink bottle, he would have like the exact amount that's perfect for him. And he'd weigh all his food. He was just meticulous.
Really?
Yeah, he was the
more man. Than anyone else.
He just completely more than everyone else. He'd be the guy out training in the snow, and he was impressive in that way. His determination and discipline was just unbeatable.
Wow. It probably explains why he did turn literally every stone, you know.
Absolutely.
Even some stones that probably shouldn't have turned, but yeah. That's the nature of the beast, isn't it?
And his mentality was different as well. It wasn't like, I'm going to win this race. It's like, this race is mine. You're going to take it from me. You know, so his mindset was he'd already won. It was his to lose, you know.
Yeah.
So it was just a different way of looking at things that I just found very impressive.
Yeah, it is. You got to admire that mindset, no matter kind of, you know, what area of life you're in.
Yeah.
And what didn't you know about your first business that you wished you would have known? And let's take Contour Clinics.
Yeah. Look, I think, I mean, going back to something I touched on before, you know, I knew it was important, but didn't know it was as important was the networking. I feel like our biggest successes have come from relationships. Mm. You know, our first you know, franchise partner was a good relationship we developed. Our, you know, bringing on our surgical team was a network that kind of come out of nowhere. All of the biggest developments have all come through kind of a network or a connection or and even they may be just ideas that have come through a connection.
Mm.
I guess is probably I wish I knew how important that was. I would have kind of pushed that stuff earlier.
With networking, people that do a lot of networking, you meet a lot of people. How do you know who to trust?
Well, I mean, it is hard, and you will kind of, I mean, I know with a lot of networks and connections I've made, they all come to nothing. But, you know, it's a numbers game.
And, yeah.
You know, I don't.
You've got to be in there.
I don't mind that stuff either.
Yeah. You know, so. Is it like a vibe that you get off? Like, how do you, do you know what I mean? Like, sometimes I feel like we meet a lot of people and you do rely on a vibe and it's hard to explain.
It's probably a gut feeling, yeah. Yeah, I think. I mean, the ones that have kind of come to nothing, you did have a bit of a feeling that may happen.
Yeah.
The other thing is, as well with that stuff, is you always got to listen if there's like a general sense about a person. So I've got, especially in our space, we've got a few snakes in there, and you'll hear about it beforehand.
From
other
base.
People. And if you hear about it a couple of times, you just have to pay attention.
Yeah, you start connecting the dots.
Yeah, and then what I find is that I always like to see the best in people, and then they're so charming and you think, oh, this guy's amazing.
Yeah, yeah,
and
then
it all kind of unravels and
you
end up having a bad experience, and you think, yeah, you just have to listen if someone...
Yeah, I like that. That's a good tip.
Yeah.
And now that I'm thinking about it, the other thing when I meet new people is... Sounds so simple, but even did they do what they said they were going to do? Even the littlest of things, or just, I don't know, just this little things. It's so funny when you meet new people. The judgment, like judgment's a bad word. Generally, like that word has been used in a negative connotation. But let's face it, we're humans. We judge.
Of course,
you don't know someone. You're going to pick up on cues.
Yeah,
There's no more place that you get exposed to that than when you're in, you know, networking situations.
Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah, I find it fascinating. But no, that's a great tip. It sounds like it's something that you just keep continuing to grow and benefit from.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. And if you could have earned more money and had more time working for someone else, would you still started Contour Clinics?
Never. No, I really like the freedom that comes with owning a business. Mm. And it's not even necessarily like I can now go and lay on my balcony and, you know, enjoy the sun. It's more like I have the option of doing that. I never would do that. But psychologically, I feel like I can work harder knowing it's my choice to be here.
Yeah.
You know,
a bit like the cycling when you were young?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, maybe.
Because I think of that when I hear you talk, because it's like a competition and it's something you've got to be focused on and it's a game that you're playing, so to speak. And it's like you found your next version of professional cycling.
Look, exactly. So it's it is competitive, you know. It's about, you know, getting more patients in and more revenue, and that they're all like my metrics of success. And that's probably why I struggled in the hospital a little bit, because there was none of that.
Yeah.
You know, I could work, didn't matter how hard I worked, I wasn't going anywhere different.
Yeah.
You know, I knew I had to do my time.
Yeah.
And I can't sit around and just do 10 years of time.
Yeah.
You know, without, sure, I'm learning a skill and I'm progressing, but it's not, there's nothing to judge success from.
Yeah.
Rather than just ever so slowly creeping your way towards a specialty.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes a lot of sense. You've got to be that person to want to do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Time.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you think your industry will be different 10 years from now?
I think it'll be it'll be no longer a thing just for mostly women. I think it'll be pretty much standard across the board. I think men and women equally will probably get this stuff done. And I think it'll rely a lot more on technology in the future.
Okay, so, with the equipment?
Yeah, with the equipment. So like facial. So we're really getting into that at the moment. We've got like 3D facial cameras that do all the assessments of the face and give you like the best ratios and, you know, where you should treat and where you shouldn't treat. And I feel like that's going to become a much bigger part. It's going to be much more objective rather than subjective.
Right.
So we're going to have like this is going to be the perfect ratio of your chin to your nose to how far your lips should stick out. I think that's going to become a much bigger place.
And that's all for the better?
Yeah, I think so. I think, I mean, you always got to have some artistic flair doing this stuff, but I do think that there is some value to a slight cookie-cutter approach. It is safe and consistent and reproducible.
Yep.
I think that kind of stuff will be a bit more common.
Yeah, it's all into that area of quality control and exactly. Getting the outcome that you expected.
Yeah, and or better. I think it'll be a lot more heavily regulated, which will be for the better. I mean, we can't wait for that to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And Josh, what does success in business mean to you?
Look, I guess the success, I mean, I guess the reason I'm chasing success in business, it's a freedom, really. Mm. It's a freedom of choice.
Mm.
So the more successful I get, the more options I have, the more choice I have, I guess. That's basically it.
Awesome. I can definitely relate to that. And mate, before we sign off, if any of our listeners wanted to connect with you online or even perhaps visit Contour Clinics,
yep,
how are they best to do so?
Yeah, so I mean, you can visit our website. It's www.contourclinics.com.au, or connect with me on LinkedIn, or you can always email me. It's drjosh@contourclinics.com.au.
Great, mate. Well, that brings us to the end. I've thoroughly enjoyed it, mate.
And yeah, when
I think
it's
about
fun.
Yeah, I think about your story. A couple of things come to my mind. I think there's a competitor in you in terms of the cycling background. I never knew that about you, and I think that there's no surprises that you've continued to pursue success because you've got it, and that focus and that discipline. I think that's kind of carried on in your life. And
yeah.
The other thing that strikes me about you, Josh, is you're a continual learner.
Yeah, yeah.
You, no matter what kind of interface you've been, you've never been afraid to learn something new, and you've never been afraid to put the hard yards in, because your story is all about hard yards, learning what you don't know and becoming a master at it. And I think you've done that extremely well, mate. And congratulations on everything you've built
so far.
Thanks,
mate. Cheers.
Cheers.
Awesome.